Okay, welcome back. And it's Friday. It's our night with Admiral Cooper. We're having fun. I hope you can go to guests and click on that, pull the gallery up, and we're looking at the second line, number 10. Number 10.
Number 10.
We're on board of, looks like a, I'm going to guess it's a helicopter carrier.
It was a British LST that had been completely refurbished and sold to the Brazil Navy, and we are on the aft section of the ship, which is the helipad. And like I say, to go to this island, Trindade, I'm probably mispronouncing it, but what the heck, you must have permission from the Brazil Navy, and you also have to have assistance because it's 2.5 days.
So they took you out there. Now, were they already going out there, or did they do this especially for you?
No. They go about every 3 months because they change the staff out there. They got 30, 40 people on the island. And,
that many?
They it's not a combat base. They raise the flag to show that they own 200 miles of fishing around there. It's an EEZ, economic exclusion zone. And they also, when they took me out there, they also took out several people that were going to be doing scientific experiments out there, and a fresh group of troops. So, like I say, every 3 months they go out and they bring in more troops and take back the other ones back home. It's beautiful out there. It's a beautiful island. There's not a damn thing to do because they have nothing on the island. You can't get TV. You know, 1,000 miles out to sea.
Well, they have DVDs. They probably have an enormous library. I'll bet they have a link, a satellite uplink or something.
Yeah, they did, because there was a room. Well, they had a small communications building, and there were some telephones in there they could use, and they could also get internet. So,
You got Netflix then. They got movies.
Right.
So, this is an interesting picture. I see houses along the shoreline to the left. Over to the right, you see the oval circle with the arrow, and there's a couple little recognizable buildings up there. Halfway up that side of that island, or almost.
Yep.
That island looks like an old volcanic crater. Or not a crater, it's a volcano. Long ago.
It could have been.
Anyway,
I don't know. Everything on that island is rock. And nothing is flat. It's up or it's down. And if you need to go a mile, it's going to cost you 3 miles of walking because you're going up and down. And the ground is covered with little pebbles about half the size of a golf ball. So you take one step forward and slide back half a step. And plus, they finally got the goats and the pigs off the island. So there's nothing to eat the vegetation. So you got these tangly, thorny plants that grab at your ankles. And it was a lot of fun. They had this one younger. They gave me complete free run of the island. And so they had this younger guy go with me. And so I finally asked my host, the captain, who was my escort out there. I said, how come you got this guy going with me? Are you afraid I'm going to steal the island? He says, no, he's a doctor, and you're not a young man anymore, in case you have a heart attack when you're up in the mountains. So,
really?
I thanked him, but I chose not to have a heart attack.
So he's the one that passed away the next year, wasn't it? Heart attack?
No, he was just a kid. He was about 30 years old. So I'm sure he's still clanking along pretty good. But we went all over this island. You know, we don't have time for me to put up all the photos. There's creeks and streams all over. And at the time, at the end of the war, the Germans had a contingent on that island again, and they had goats, you know, herds of goats and pigs, and they also had wild turtles. And almost unlimited water. So the ships and submarines and not so many submarines, but mostly ships going down to South America after the end of the war, they'd stop here to replenish water and food. Mm-hmm. But what we're looking at now is, this is a photo I shot a few years ago, but 1938, the Brazilian Navy just pulled all their people off, and about a week later, there was a German scientific exploration arrived. Well, obviously, it was set up ahead of time because they didn't mm-hmm. make it from Germany in right. a week.
We're looking at picture number 13 now, Harry.
Yeah, let's go to 13, because 12 and 13, it's the same thing, only decades apart. That's that same plateau.
Right.
And you can see the mountain behind it now in the photo I shot. It was early in the morning and the clouds were still on the island. They built a radio station there with an 80-meter tall mast. And they built another one on the south end of the island.
Two of
this
them.
Is number mm-hmm. two, I think, and the other one's number one. I'm not sure which is which. But the ships laid over there for a little while. The main ship was the Schwabenland, and it was a catapult ship, and it had a couple of Dornier flying boats on it. I forget what it is, a DO-19, I think it was. They called it the Whale, the Dornier Whale. And now let's switch over to number 14, and you'll see a closer view of the radio station.
I see it.
Yeah, Zelte, I don't know what that is, but it's also a funk station. It's a radio station, and it's a 80-watt sendmast. That's a radio tower. And the date was 18 and 19 of March of 1939. And then you look on number 15, and that was the headquarters, such that it was the base camp. So if you look at the map, which is number 16.
I'm looking at number 15.
Okay, let's go back to number 15. What's number 15?
Now, what is the color of the terrain at that time, do you think? Is it just grasses and things around?
Yeah, brownish
much?
Rocky. Brownish rocky.
Right. And that's volcanic.
Grass,
yeah.
I guess. But it's rough terrain. It is really rough terrain.
Where'd they have the goats? Down lower? You said they had a lot of goats, and they supply...
Yeah.
The subs with goat meat and stuff during the war.
They let them pretty much run all over. If you look at number 16, that is the lower southeast corner of the island, and that's where everything took place. But the rest of the island is about 2 miles long, and so they let the goats and the pigs run loose, I think. And when they needed them, they would just go and whack a few of them, or many of them, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But everything took place around this southeastern corner. That's because the rest of it is even more desolate than this.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at the topographical lines. It's just like straight up. And all,
yeah.
Nearly. It's everything's sloped terribly. You can see that.
Right. And from A, which is where the headquarters was, down to C, it's about a mile. Boy, let me tell you,
tough line.
Tough, yeah, up mm-hmm. and down very high mountainous passes, and I'd be hard pressed to do it again now, because now I'm 81, almost 82. I'd still get it done, but it was a lot easier 10 years ago when I went.
Right.
Now, if you're looking at B on there with the red X, that's where mm-hmm. the radio tower is on that plateau that we just saw.
Got it. And the other end had another similar tower and
that's
facility?
That's correct. Where I've indicated my C, we'll mm-hmm. see that in a few more photos. I left that for
right.
later on. But that's, and it, you can't see it, but there's where I put a little black arrow with a scruggly asterisk pointed at the end of the mm-hmm. point on that island. That's where there's that tunnel that goes through the island, through that little chunk of island, which is a, about, well, I think it's like 80 meters high, and the water's 15 meters deep, and you could hide a ship in there, although we have no evidence that any was ever hidden
in
there.
When you say tunnel, it was at the water level, it was a cavern, and it went in?
Okay. All the way through.
Through to where?
To the other side of the island. You know, right there, the island is only about a half a mile wide.
And this was a natural lava tunnel of some kind.
Yeah, natural tunnel, yep.
Was it big enough to get a boat in, a U-boat?
Big enough to get even bigger than that. 80 meters high, that's 250 feet high.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, 15 meters deep, that's like 50 feet.
So they could have had U-boats in there a lot.
They could have, yeah, but we have no evidence, yes or no.
Any lateral tunnels into the big tunnel, the cavern, to bring supplies in and do the loading in protected circumstances?
Never found out, because there is from where my yellow arrow point is, there is a narrow ledge about 3 feet wide that goes all the way around there to the tunnel. But unfortunately, the day I was there, they had heavy seas breaking. And, you know, if you get hit with a 10-foot wave while you're on that walkway, they'll never find your body. So I never got that far. My arrow was all the farther I got.
All right. So this tunnel
is
fully visible. Let's say you're in a boat going around the tip there. You could take a picture of this tunnel and you'd see it.
Absolutely. I've got photos of the tunnel I'll send you after we get off the air.
Oh, well, I didn't think we got to put them up here. Oh, yeah. Well, we need to see that.
Okay. Well, I'll send them to you and we can do whatever you need to do with them. But the fact I didn't get there.
I'll add them to this group of pictures. Okay.
Okay. All right. Sounds
Next
like
up.
A plan.
Antarctic.
Probably,
yeah, go ahead.
But probably not tonight because.
All right, whenever.
That's what I'm. During the break, I was answering some emails from some of your listeners wanting to know about the books, and I told them I'll send them everything first thing in the morning because I'll be on the phone with you here until 11 o'clock at night, and then I'm going to bed because I get up, you know, at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
I got to get a life.
A lot of times I'm still awake when Harry gets up.
Yeah.
I guess
we're 3 hours
fine.
Apart.
Yeah. All right.
Yep, number 17. That's the German expedition to map out what Germany was claiming as their chunk of Antarctica, Neue Schwabenland, which means New Swabia. And number 18, that's the ship itself, the Schwabenland. That's the flagship of the fleet. And in the after deck, you see one of the Dornier flying boats.
That's the flying boat with a pusher-puller engine on top of the wing. I can see that.
That's correct. Yeah. A lot of seaplanes, flying boats, etc., had that push-pull operation. I don't know why. I studied aviation, but I still never figured out why a pusher and puller would work.
And
but,
a catapult would throw the plane off the rear of the boat, and it would go right up. All right.
Yep. Yeah, and then it would come back and land next to the boat, taxi over, and they'd pick it up
see
with
the
that
crane?
Big boom, you see. Yeah, that crane.
Do you know
back on deck.
How many ships were in the expedition?
I forget. Off top of my head, though, I think it was five ships. The primary was the Schwabenland. The rest were support ships.
All right, now take a look at the next picture. This is very interesting. Number 19. This is a four-engined seaplane, flying boat.
Yeah, they apparently had a couple of different ones.
They only put two on the right side. I'll assume it's four.
Yeah, there's four engines.
I'm kidding. Anyway, it's got the old twin tail, too. Remember, these planes flew when they got down there all over the Antarctic. They flew long distances. That's quite a shot with that four-engine plane coming off the back of that boat. That catapult must have had some real strength behind it.
Yeah, plus the engines were revved up, you know, to about maximum, and then they'd fire them. Like today's modern jets, you know, they crank up the jet full blast, and then as soon as the catapult lets them go, I think they hit the afterburners.
Got it.
And these things, like you see this flying boat here in number 19, they don't need that much speed to get airborne. It's not like they're a jet fighter that has to have 100 knots to keep in the air or whatever. These things had a stall speed probably around 55 or so knots.
Hmm. Okay, number 20.
Number 20 tells the whole story there. It would if I hit number 20. There we go.
This it's right after
is
19.
The area in between 19 and 21, I'll bet.
It's a good bet.
Yeah. So this is the area that Germany had carved out as New Schwabenland. The chart is tilted a little bit. It should be rotated a little to the, one click to the right, because you see the Atlantic Ocean should not be where it's at.
On the bottom.
But this is the way the chart came up. And this is a big chunk of property, because you keep in mind that Antarctica is six times the size of the United States. And so these flying boats would fly along the border of what they were claiming, mm-hmm. and dropping what they called spears. We'll see one of them in a minute. There was about 5.5 feet long stainless steel with a flat top on them and a swastika. And every 10 kilometers, they'd drop a 2-meter spear that had a metal swastika flag on the top of it. And about 2016, my associate Annette and I were going to put together an expedition. And I went over to Monte Carlo because she was tight with the royal family. I landed in France. They choppered me from France over, landed right smack in Monte Carlo. And we met with all sorts of important people. They taxied us around in a Maserati limousine. Oh, boy, that was nice. The burled wood on the dashboard cost more than my Corvette. And we had everything set. And I went back to the U.S. The next thing I know, the secret police came, and she got arrested under some phony charge. They beat the hell out of her. She sent me pictures, and she had bruises all over her. And they put her little dog, her little French poodle, into a crate and stuck it out in the outside and just left it until it died. So apparently we weren't supposed to go to Antarctica.
You remember what I said? You remember? We talked about that. I said,
yeah.
Harry, as soon as you told me she was being hassled, I said, no, you can't do it. It's
a
no-no.
Obviously.
There's many areas down there that no one can fly over. No one. Completely off limits now. Linda Moulton Howe has done a lot of work on that, and apparently has gotten statements from pilots who have been down there legally flying, mm-hmm. and what they've seen. And there's a lot of very strange activity down there. Let's put it that way.
Right. And you know, from our previous conversations, I have no problem going over a fence, even when it says Ein Gang Verboten, because I know that means
sure.
Harry is welcome here. But how do you get to Antarctica? I can fly to Germany. I can rent a car and drive around. I can go jump fences there. How do you get to Antarctica? You can't, you know, $5,000 and I can do a good 2-week exploration, South America, Europe, mm-hmm. whatever. $5,000 ain't even going to scratch the surface. You got to have $500,000 to do it down in Antarctica for so many reasons. And I don't have nowhere near that kind of money. And our wealthy members are dying out, so I don't think I'll ever get to Antarctica.
It was an interesting idea. Now, picture number 21.
Mm-hmm.
What the Germans found there was a lot of very anomalous geology.
Mm-hmm.
Geography, too. Very interesting. Volcanic rocks, for the most part, you can see. This used to be a continent at one point. It was not covered with ice, so it moved somehow.
The Earth shifted on its axis, too.
Right.
Right now, Polaris is the North Star, but at another point way back in ancient times, there was a totally different star that was the North Star.
It is said that deep drilling has brought up all kinds of evidence of civilization that was there.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not an expert on Antarctica, except that they don't want me there.
No, they don't. Okay, number 22,
this is something else. Holy Lance Peak. Did they name it that because of its shape? Or is that where they hid the Holy Lance? For those who are not familiar, the Holy Lance, or in German's Heilige Lance, that was the tip of the spear that pierced Christ's side.
The spear of Longinus.
Longinus, right. He was the Roman soldier, centurion, whatever, who stabbed Christ with the spear on the cross, allegedly to hasten his death so he wouldn't suffer. And that artifact, and there was a couple of other artifacts from those days it was on, was held in Salzburg. And so at the time of the Anschluss, when Austria joined with the Third Reich, that stuff was all brought under control of the Third Reich. But then when everything fell apart, it disappeared. And now it's back, I'm told, in Salzburg. There's a duplicate of it in the town of Nuremberg.
So the original is somewhere, and they made a duplicate for public display. That's what you're saying?
Right. The duplicate is in Nuremberg, but the original is supposed to be in Salzburg now. So where was it hidden? Was it hidden down here at Holy Lance Peak, or did they just name it that because it looks like the tip of the Spear of Longinus?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think the latter would be it. They could have put it in the back of your GMC truck, and it would have been safe. Number three.
23.
Shows some of the men there with a German flag, which was they planted. Yeah.
They were there on Antarctica, and you see the guy on the right's got a rifle, probably a K-98 Mauser. You can see the barrel sticking up over his left shoulder. That's probably to ward off vicious penguins.
They don't look awfully cold. You see, the guy in the middle doesn't even have gloves on.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe they're just tough guys. Or maybe
number
it wasn't
24.
That cold.
Well, that's. I would think it wasn't that cold. Number 24 shows one of the airdropped markers, correct?
Right. The ones that Pizarro, my number one agent, he told me about it. He sent me this picture. Call them the spears. And this on the top of it had a swastika. One of the reasons I wanted to get down there was to go along this borderline and see if there are any still remaining to prove out what we've already been told.
I'll bet the powers that be have already been down there and picked them up for their own souvenirs at home.
In, but they dropped a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
maybe this. We'll never know because I don't think I'm going to get down there.
That area you'd have to cut that whole area, New Schwabenland, is big, bigger than Germany by 2-3 times. It's huge.
Oh, every bit of that. Yeah, massive. So, you know, the colonists, that's the word. We're picking up colonies way bigger. Look at Portugal. That's a tiny little country. One of their colonies was Brazil, which is half of South America.
Mm-hmm.
And they just recently ceded them their freedom. Told them, "Here, you can. We'll work together with trade, but you're on your own now."
That's a remarkable picture, number 25. That's quite a peak. Look at that.
end. Look on the left. That's a periscope.
I was going to ask, what ship were they on?
Pizarro never told me. His father was on one of the U-boats. He was first he was on U-209, then he was on U-880, and he died on 880. But I don't know if this was 880 or what it was. He never told me what it was, but this is a boat cruising off of Antarctica.
Wow. Very interesting picture. Okay, now I have a whole bunch of pictures we might get to for a few minutes here.
Okay, I'll talk
let's
fast.
Let's go back to number 28.
Roger that.
You're back on Trinidad, not Trinidad. And is that one of the Radio Shacks?
Well, not 28, but 27 and 26.
26.
Yeah, 26 is me standing in front of the Radio Shack that was on the far southeastern corner of the island.
Yeah.
And 27 is the stanchions that held the radio tower. And that soldier there, he was detailed to stay with me also with the doctor. And he's a Brazilian SEAL. So those are the remains of the radio station. It's still there.
Somebody blew that tower up.
Well, either that or just rusted and fell down. That sea air is not very kind to metal.
See all the graffiti on there, too. Probably the Germans put that up when they were there.
Graffiti?
On the side of the...
I don't know what that is. Either that or maybe it was some of the Brazilian sailors, because... Now, like I say, in 1938, they pulled their people off, the Brazilians. Then in 1941, the Germans left, and the Brazilians come back. You see in photo number 28. That's their little...
Does that go back to... Is that actually 1941 written in stones that's been there all these years? And somebody just repainted it?
I think they repainted. You know, they got to keep sailors busy. They got to keep the enlisted men busy. So they keep it clean. But that is to remind them that 1941, the Germans left and the Brazilians came back. However, the war ended in May of 1945. I mean, the European side of the war ended May of 45. And the Brazilians pulled their people off the island again. And in July, Germany had a contingent on the island again. Look at number 29. You can just barely make out a 7 there. There was a sailor, a German sailor, who was killed in an accident in July of 1945. I think it was the 17th of July. What were they doing there 4 months after the surrender? Well, we know what they were there for. Yeah, they were there to supply. And if you look closely, you see all that grass? Try to walk up them hills where the ground is all marbly rocks and stuff is yanking at your feet. Boy.
That's all rock. All of it.
Yeah. I got fond memories of that one, though. But anyhow, we know that the Germans were there for 2 more years after the end of the war. They were there at least until 1947 because, you know, that was the rat line was coming down there, ships, et cetera. And they were stopping there. And
all with the blessings of the occupying American forces. Don't forget that.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the quid pro quo. The average troop had no idea. They were supposed to kill all the Germans, et cetera. But the higher-ups, you know, let it go. And as you know, in 1947, I think it was, Truman told gay Edgar Hoover, back off. Don't be looking for Hitler no more.
And we have the actual FBI memo from gay Edgar Hoover that says, from this point on, there will be no further searching, no attempts made, I'm paraphrasing, to locate Adolf Hitler or any other Germans in South America. It's not worth our time. Stop. And that was that memo it exists.
Right. And it's not worth our time. What they really means is that was the agreement. We got so many scientists, technicians, engineers, and so much secret documentation. As I mentioned before on your show, my career field in the Air Force was thermonuclear weapons, and I was in tech school from January until July of 1958. The war had only been over 12, 13 years. And part of, in the early parts of our class, the first week or two, we saw movies of the American atomic energy plant or techniques and experimentation. We weren't doing very well. The Japanese test fired their first weapon 1 week before we test fired our first weapon. And then we were short on uranium. Plus, they had troubles with the triggers. The early, I don't know if they're still the same way, but the early models of a nuclear weapon, you had a little ball of enriched uranium about the size of an orange, maybe a grapefruit, and 64 shaped charges all around it to make a giant ball. And all 64 charges had to go off at the exact same millimicrosecond to squeeze in and create critical mass, and then you got this gigantic explosion. If one charge went off a zillionth of a second too soon or too late, all you had was junk flying around. And as it turned out, I didn't even know it at the time, but one of our members, Dr. Heinz Schlicker, came over and was the guy in charge of designing the infrared triggers that we use, and he was the guy in charge of the one blast at Trinity site. But unfortunately, he died before I realized he was doing that. But that was the quid pro quo. We got the jet fighters, we got the rocket fighters, we got the jet bombers, we got the V-1, V-2 missiles. Up at Eglin Air Force Base on the Florida Panhandle, they had a whole section where they were test firing V-1s out over the Gulf of Mexico after the war was over, and there are still V-1 carcasses laying up there alongside the launch ramps. So we got all that stuff from Germany.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can we get one? Let's get one.
No, it's not allowed. Some of our members, Bud and Stella Dana, went up there some years ago, and they were allowed with escort to go to this area and look at all that stuff. And it's all laying there rusting away. And Bud says, hey, why don't you guys take this in and preserve it? And he says, no, there's a directive. We cannot touch it for any reason.
How many V-1s were there on the ground? V-2s?
Geez, I don't remember. Just a couple.
But several?
These were ones that, huh?
Several? Like,
yes.
Not just one. There were several.
Two,
they
three,
brought,
I guess.
They brought so much stuff over here, it's not funny.
Right.
I've read a number of, now these are conjectural stories, but I've read that they had brought over many discs from the German flying disc program. And they were here, and they were actually, they were scrapped at one point. Why, I don't know, but they ended up at Wright Pat. They were moved around 2-3 times.
Right.
And this is a remarkable program. There were two parallel programs in Germany. One that's, we'll call it a civilian, and one was an SS program to develop flying discs. Okay?
Yeah.
And these were exotically propelled. They were not propelled by standard combustion engines or anything of the like.
Anti-grav or electronic,
right.
Whatever.
Victor Schauberger and others.
A lot of that is touched on in the book we sell that was written by Clark McClellan, Space, the Final Frontier, Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know. That's another book you can get from Shark Hunter. Not on the special, though. But, Clark touches on that, and then that book is full of stuff. And, of course, as we found out, Wright Pat is the repository for all sorts of spook stuff.
Crash disks, bodies, apparently.
Yeah.
And it's all underground, deep underground.
Yeah, two,
all
three, right. Four stories down.
Pull up the next thing under Harry's name. It's a story that I put together with pictures. And some are repeats, some are not. If you can pull that up, just look under Harry's name. It's the second link there. It's right there. It's called The 1938 German Expedition to Antarctica. All right. Now, this is a link from the website. Harry and I worked on this. He gave me some pictures, and I found some, and so we put them together. The first picture is a very interesting picture. Explain that to our listeners, Harry.
Yeah, this
the German
was a very
submarine
famous...
fleet is proud. Yes.
Right. This was a very positive part, a very integral part of Hitler's escape. The German submarine fleet was not the ones that started this. It was the German Navy. It was a guy named, the name escapes me, but anyhow, he was an Oberleutnant Zersee, and he was skipper of a 90-ton sailing ship that used to run in and out of Argentina. But before that, it was Canaris, Admiral Canaris, but when he was only an Oberleutnant, he was on the World War I cruiser Dresden that was the only survivor of Admiral Graf von Spee's cruiser squadron when they clashed with the Brits. And the only reason it got away, it was one knot faster than the British ships, and it went through the Straits of Magellan. And Canaris was plotting all the little hidey holes in there, all the little coves where ships, et cetera, could hide. And they got around to Chile, and the cruiser was just totally shot. Nothing was working on it anymore, so they abandoned the cruiser. They were interned by the Chilean people. This was 1915. Canaris got out and went over the Andes on horseback in the middle of winter, and one tough guy to do that, and he came down on the eastern side of the Andes in a little tiny village called San Carlos de Bariloche, and it looked exactly like Bavaria, and all the property around that area was owned by Germans. So this is what Dönitz mentioned, and the skipper, whose name I can't remember, I'll remember it 5 minutes off after we're off the air, he was asked by Bormann if it would be possible for him to get back into this little hidden cove on the Patagonian coast with his wooden sailboat if he had a special passenger. And the guy told, yeah, no problem. So, that skipper got the Knight's Cross. And when I first got to looking into this, I said, okay, this guy's got a Knight's Cross. Who the hell is he? He never served in combat. How do you get a Knight's Cross if you're not in combat? Well, that's it. He was sneaking spies and equipment in and out. And his favorite landing place was the Caleta de los Loros, which means Parrot Cove, at the northwestern corner of Golfo San Matias.
Right.
So that's how they got Bariloche going, and that's where Hitler wound up for 10 years after the war. Actually, it was across the lake from Bariloche by the little tiny town of Villa Langostura. And as you know, we've been there several times. And we even stayed overnight when we went there last in 2019 in the guest house right near, you know, within 100 feet of the main house.
Keep in mind that all the Brazilians who cared and all the Argentinians who lived down there, it was common knowledge all over the South America that Hitler was there. It was no big secret. They all know. That Patagonia, everybody knew, and no one said anything. They just kept it quiet. It was the deal. And there was a lot of sympathy for Germany in those days, and during the war and before the war.
There's mostly German families living down there that had emigrated prior to World War I. And also in Bariloche, there was a whole lot of SS emigrated there, and that formed Hitler's defensive people. Priebke, Erich Priebke, he was a Hauptsturmführer, I think he was, captain in the SS. He was one of Hitler's personal guards down there. I had dinner with his son a few years ago, right around the time Priebke was in house arrest in Rome. About 15 years ago, I guess it was. So he was there. And we visited places down there in Bariloche where Mengele used to meet with Eichmann and the Club right. Andino, which is the Andes club, ski club, was founded by a German guy, Otto Mehling, as a center for spies.
Well,
busy place down there.
Yeah, very, very. Well, the trade was, we got the hell of a lot of great technology, engineers came over, scientists came over. The first, for those of you who don't know, and I am repeating this, but the first director of NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, was a, some people might call him a Nazi, but he wasn't. He was a German scientist. He was Hitler's director of rocketry at Peenemünde all during the war. His number one scientist was Wernher von Braun, and they both came over here. That doctor was named Dr. Kurt Debus, the director of rocketry for Germany during the war. He was the director of NASA from 1962 to 1973. It was all German brilliance, all of it.
Oh, they had a whole lot of German scientists came over with
10,000
with von Braun and
something
Debus.
Like that. Their families. All right.
Yep.
Let me go to picture number two under Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz, and we'll take a look. There's a cloud there in the background. Somebody claims that that's a nuclear bomb that was lit off to blow up a German base, and I, it doesn't look like a nuclear bomb to me. I don't know what
no,
it is.
No, not to me either.
It just looks like a cloud. It was a volcanic release of steam. I don't know, but that
could
doesn't look like a nuclear bomb. That was a
no,
legend.
That was
anyway.
My career field in the Air Force was nuclear and thermonuclear weapons. I've never seen one with a cloud like that.
No, that doesn't show any characteristics. Thank you for that. All right, now we have scrolled down rather quickly. You see the color picture of the back end of the ship, Schwabenland. It's right there. The catapult has thrown an aircraft up. They've got the boom turned around. They're getting ready to pick one up wherever it is. The next picture shows that push-pull aircraft being launched from the back of the boat. The next picture is the actual photographer who went on the trip. Color picture. If you go down to the black and white picture below, that's him. Same guy. That's him on the trip in the original 1938-39 expedition with a little, looks like a Bolex camera, movie camera. So there he is.
Those were modern back in them days.
Yeah. The next picture is the push-pull seaplane that was launched off the back of the Schwabenland. So there it is. And the next is a drawing of the actual German territorial claim of Antarctica. There it is. And that was actually, if you look at things in perspective, that would have been on the upside closer to South America.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Than the other side. It was the northern Atlantic. It pointed toward the northern Atlantic. Just think of it.
Yeah,
that
you
way.
Rotate that chart 180 degrees, and it would be
correct.
More sensical.
All right, next picture. Very interesting. A lake, not frozen. A freshwater lake in the middle of New Schwabenland. They flew over it. There it is. That water is not frozen.
Yeah.
Very
Admiral Byrd talked about that during his Operation High Jump. He talked about warm lakes.
There's another one shown, I believe, in the next picture. On the left, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like another lake. It's greenish. Keep going down. Now, look at the picture with the red marker on it. It's very important. And I put above it clear and obvious large air vent or entry port for UFO disks. Now take a look at that with the red marker on it. Does that look natural to you? Not a chance.
No, God doesn't draw perfect circles or straight lines.
It's a vent. And if you scroll down to the next one, that's another one. This is not the same one. This is another vent. And you can see the upside down, it's a triangular shaped. Somebody made that. That's a triangular vent, an opening. It goes deep inside those mountains.
And so, like I said, nature does not draw straight lines or perfect circles.
I don't have the actual measurement what that is, but it's probably 6 to 8 feet tall, 8 to 10 feet wide, I'm guessing. I don't think it's too much bigger than that. But it's clearly these two are two different vents in that particular mountain range. Okay. Now here are some stills from the German film of their 1939 expedition. A documentary film by Gunther Rietau, whoever he is, and it gives you the subtitles. And if you scroll down to the pictures, you'll see again the Schwabenland, and then the push-pull plane. They're duplicates, like I said, but it's interesting. These are directly from the film. Then it shows four of the crew, and they wore these look like leather slicker suits or something like that. They're standing on the outside to keep warm, I think. What would those suits be made of? Leather? Polished leather?
They used leather a lot. There were no synthetics back in them days, remember. And the U-boaters, they all wore leathers, fur-lined leathers, except if they were in the tropics, of course, and they were in their underwear all the time. But it was... leathers, fur-lined. I've got one of those jackets right here.
Wow. Okay. So keep on going down. There's another picture of the photographer, two black and whites with a suggestion that there might be an opening in that dark shadow over there. I don't know. I think I saw a better picture of it earlier, and it was not. It was just shadowed. It was not an opening. Then we get to one that shows a glacier or frozen river, however you want to call it, moving down through the mountains. This is all in New Schwabenland. Picture of a sunset or a sunrise. No ice there. No iceberg. Oh, just suggestion that things are open. Now the pictures get really, really interesting. These are some of the enormous caverns that were found by the German explorers down there. Enormous. Sorry about the quality of the pictures, but you get the idea. These are huge. Number one shows somebody standing to the right. Number two shows three people. Look at the geology there. Just extraordinary.
Huge.
And so they've walked into that cavern opening. This is what gave rise to a lot of the suggestions that the Germans had an enormous underground base there, because these natural formations would have been perfect to build something had they had the time, and it would have been protected from the elements. So there you go. And if you look at the next one, there are two men on the left of this opening. You can see the sun in the background. Big pile of snow there. But these are huge. And the next one, the same thing. What made these? I don't know. One would suggest that perhaps lava. In this particular one, there's a stream of water coming down on the left, if you see it.
Yeah.
And also on the right.
Behind those two guys.
Correct. Yeah. And then, now look at this next one. A waterfall that must be 60, 70 feet up, coming straight down in that cave. There's four people there. These are incredible wonders. This film was made for distribution in German movie theaters in 1939 and 40. And
that was
take a look at those pictures. Yeah, look at these pictures. So enjoy those. At the end of the expedition film, It goes into a whole nother array of photographs which are not related to the actual Schwabenland expedition.
Mm.
And there's another picture of that four-engine plane being catapulted off the back. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Keep in mind, they did expeditions like this in 1936 way up the Amazon River. We've got pictures of a cemetery up there with 2-meter-high crosses that all have swastikas on them.
Well, isn't that a picture of the Schwabenland with another rather large ship next to it in the background? Anyway, enjoy those. That is from an actual new, we'll call it a newsreel, so to speak.
That's
when you
what
get
it was.
Down to the, when you get down to the bottom, it says end. Above the word end is a group of lady and male and female hikers. They're in a cavern, but this cavern is not in Antarctica. This cavern was built somewhere in Germany, Poland, somewhere. You see the cables, I think. They look like cables anyway. But that picture is really a little bit out of context. They didn't have that kind of garb when they were in Antarctica. So that's another cavern somewhere. Anyhow, and then you can see some really interesting pictures. I don't know what they are, but... They're there. Thank you.
The buildings down below, the one, there's a flak term, and shows the flak term being built. And then way down below that that's the Olympia Stadium in Berlin. The big roundy.
Harry said flak term. That's the picture that has what look like two round silos going up.
Exactly.
And a square platform around them. Those
were four silo-looking things at each corner, and each one had an 88 millimeter gun on it, which was shot down more Allied planes than the Luftwaffe did. And then around the... They also had 37 millimeters and 20 millimeters in case some planes, fighters got in low. There's one of these in Berlin, and we visit that whenever we go to Berlin, the Flak Tower.
Right. These are very interesting pictures, and I don't know what they really are. One is of an enormous man-made cavern with a rail line going right down the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting openings into the sides uniformly all the way down. Don't know what that is. So this is construction way down of the Olympic.
Yeah, way down.
Facility.
Look at the ones where you got that real curving outside walkway, and on the right you've got the actual building. On the left you've got little vertical whatevers. Yeah, that I believe is the Olympic Village in Berlin. We were there a few years ago.
All right, and there's a hole going straight down with pipes coming up out of it. That's kind of fun. I don't know what that's about either. Almost looks like ice around
it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, don't know. All right. Well done, sir. As always, fascinating information. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Say hello to the family. And talk to you soon.
Sounds like a plan. I'll send out some more of those photos to you, and you can do whatever you need with them.
Good. Will do. Okay. Thanks, sir.
Roger that. All right.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. Okay, sharkhunters.com. You want to join something that brings history to life, that's it. Back in a minute. Hold on.